Blog Talk Radio.
Valentine's Day, and of course, this is St. Valentine was a saint in the early Roman Catholic Church and Roman Empire, and don't know the entire story, but this whole thing is descended into an economic thing of hustling flowers and candies and God knows what else. It's probably better known in modern history for what happened in Chicago in 1929 on this date, where Bugs Moran, who was his gang, which was the, quote, Irish ethnic north side mob in Chicago, which was competing with the south side mob, which was controlled by the Italians, Al Capone. And they were controlling beer and alcohol, illegal distribution business, or it was illegal to brew this stuff because it was prohibition. But we learned a lot about, quote, Chicago corruption. Now, when reputable surveys are done of corruption, public corruption in the United States, instinctively people think of Chicago. But Chicago is about midway down the list. The most corrupt state in the country has been Louisiana. We just had witnessed, I think his name is Nagin, the Creole mayor of New Orleans, as they call it, just been convicted in federal court on, I think, 10 or many more charges. And, of course, it's gone on for a long time down in that state. And Louisiana surpasses Illinois and Chicago and Cook County, even San Francisco, corruption. I think it's appropriate. We're going to play, because it is St. Valentine's Day, and there are things that people do not know and historians do not research about Chicago then, since then, and now. And I think with Patrick Butler, who is the author of two new books, one about districts of Chicago, Edgewater and Lakeview, the German section of Chicago and all little-known history. Also another book on Edgewater. He hadn't sent me his copy yet for review. But anyway, we did an extensive telephone interview, and we would hear his part one of that interview on Chicago corruption.
All right, Patrick, you're an expert on Chicago crime, the corrupt politics, and your 50-odd years. The media often does studies on the most corrupt cities in America. How would you rate Chicago and Cook County as compared to other places?
Actually, compared to some other places, mostly south of the Dixon line. Chicago's probably in Cook County, is always somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've been following New Orleans, where the mayor down has been convicted of several violations. I think it's at least 10.
Yeah.
And
that's not the first time, you know, a Louisiana politician. In fact, one guy got elected governor of Louisiana a number of years ago on the promise that he would not vote with both hands.
Only one.
Only with one.
It was behind his back when he hit it in his wallet.
And they figured that was enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to the Roaring Twenties. And the last, I guess, that's Republican mayor of Chicago, Bill Thompson.
Yeah, Jim Hale Thompson.
Now, I understand that he got elected by going into the, quote, Irish War thing. If King George came to Chicago, punch him in the nose. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's what called him Kaiser. Seriously.
Now
he went further than that. He not only threatened to punch the king in the nose, which was a popular prompt at that time, not only among the Irish, but among Germans as well. And he also threatened to go through all the public library and eliminate all of the pro-British books.
Did he ever do it?
No.
Okay.
But he threatened it. In fact, I think he got into a row with the very young Dr. Bradley.
Oh, yes, the minister.
The People's Church, who was himself urged to run for mayor at one time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're mayor and you have to keep me.
Well, but Preston really felt that he had
a higher calling.
a bully pulpit.
Was it true that when Big Bill, who was the predecessor of Big Thompson? Was that John Dever?
I think it was Dever.
Okay. Now, is it true when Big Bill came to Chicago, he, in effect, invited Al Capone to move back from Cicero back into Chicago?
Well, that in so many words made it rather clear he felt that Chicago would prosper better if it were a more wide-open city.
Can't get much rope on that.
Yeah, well, you know, under Dever, see, Dever is a little bit like Mayor Nally.
Mm.
He was sort of a two-shoes.
Okay. And ethnic Catholic?
Yes, but okay. You know, not. Well, let's not talk all the same brush. Good old Jansenists. And many ethnic Catholics believe kind of a live and let live type of thing. I will go to heaven my way and let you go to heaven your way. I'm not going to tell.
Okay, that's part one of that interview, and here is part two. It was a long interview.
Did you say anything to the effect that the jury treated you very well?
No, that's a Jimmy Hoffa, sorry.
We
made a little mistake. Now, we're going to have part two and maybe part three of the Butler interview on Chicago. Now, it's a lot of interesting birthdays on this day. And a lot of interesting things which deal with American commerce, but we'll get to that in a second. Now, on this day also, the first U.S. president, political animal, he's the first president to say he only wanted one term, and he accomplished a lot. He was from Tennessee, James K. Polk. He was the first U.S. president to be photographed, and of course we had the Mexican War and the Great Expansion westward, where the United States acquired Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. And of course, we have those who Mexican ethnic extremists who want Reconquista to take back what they claim was their ancestors, and that is Southern California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada. Also on this day, this is very interesting. IBM started Thomas Watson, and also United Parcel Service. Started service on this date, appropriate Valentine's Day, gave the country a Valentine's. And also it's the birthday of James K. Hoffa. Some of the things people didn't know about him, that he was from Indiana, and also family name I think was Riddle. His ethnicity was Italian and Dutch. Maybe that's why he was so stubborn and so fiery. But anyway, here he has a confrontation at a Senate crime committee hearing with Bobby Kennedy, who they were longtime enemies. And here's Hoffa and Kennedy clashing.
Did you say anything to the effect that the jury treated you very well? and that you thought that you could do very well before a jury.
Now, you know, that's pretty ridiculous.
Did you say anything like that?
I did not. And I appealed to the chair. And that be taken out of the record.
You've got people in Detroit, at least 15, who have a police record.
Did you say that SOB, I'll break his back?
Who?
You.
Say to who?
To anyone.
Take care of his speech. I don't even know who I was talking about, and I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Mr. Hoffa, all I'm trying to find out, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm trying to find out whose back you were going to break.
Figure his speech.
Yeah, Hoffa's disappearance. Now, some people think that he was convicted of something and went to prison. Frank Fitzsimmons, his vice president, became president of the Teamsters, and the deal allegedly made with President Nixon. Hoffa would be paroled or pardoned, but he was never to be involved in union activities. Hoffa said, or was allegedly said, that he was going to come back and take over the Teamsters, and that's when Hoffa suddenly disappeared. Now, his body has never been found. Some people think that he was last seen, I believe, at a restaurant, a typical mafia kind of sending a person away, as it were. And he's allegedly buried in a concrete part of the Michigan Freeway. We don't know for sure, but that's the allegation. But a fascinating guy, his son, James T. Hoffa, who has a law degree. Of course, that doesn't mean much. Looking at the legal profession today, we don't know who's bigger whores, them or some of these doctors. Anyway, James T. Hoffa has taken over the union, and he's kept it. I think he took it over about 20 years ago. And, of course, the teams are very important, as is United Parcel Service and also Federal Express. All of these services that deliver our packages and, provide commerce not only throughout the United States but throughout the world. And unlike the bicycle agenda, this country runs on four wheels or more, not two. We'll get into that another day because we are finding out that there's been this big con job of so-called experts who are deciding what is good for San Francisco and California. They don't even live here. They don't even live in the United States. They haven't even studied the situation. And you can find little or nothing about their background or expertise. Well, one guy lives on an island up in Canada, Victoria, which you can only reach by ferry or by airplane. Yet Todd Lippman has been quoted as an authority on San Francisco and California for bicycles. These are some of the cons that are going on. And, of course, as I said, you aren't going to get your pizza delivered on a bicycle or an ambulance taking you to the hospital or your Chinese or Thai takeout. Among the things that Butler and I and other people who have looked at the history of Chicago and the federal courts and the federal government trying to bring order out of this chaos is that the mafia, which a lot of people had associated with the Italians, we now have different mafias in this country. We have the Chinese Tongs, which go back to the turn of the century. We have the Vietnamese. We have the Yakuza, the Japanese, and the worst of all, I'm told, not only here in San Francisco and California, but in back east, are the Russians. They do things that the mob of yesterday, the mafia, would not even think of doing, and certainly would not do. Of course, we don't see the Italian mafia as we used to know it or think we know it, stuffing bodies in trunks or giving people cement shoes or torturing people with a blowtorch and while they're hooked on a meat hook or being burned in a cornfield like there was a famous case. So these things are taboo. Now, we strongly suspect that the mob has gone respectable and gotten involved in financial matters, real estate, insurance, brokerage, and the last chapter of the third part of The Godfather, where the new Godfather decides you got to get the family out of this business and go respectable. And I'm told this is what the second and third generations have done. They're not involved in putting out contracts on people. They're more concerned about getting contracts, especially government contracts. And there appears to be, since Nixon changed the currency laws where the bank had to report a transaction of more than $5,000 for somebody who's going out of the country. So my suspicion is, since I did work in the federal courthouse and we were dealing to monitor some of this stuff, that the mob has laundered its money into real estate development, insurance, brokerages, and other activities, as well as probably still doing some of the things that they did in World War II. In the interest of national security, whether it's drugs or running arms, God only knows, and we're not going to go there. Among the other things today, talking about the mob, is that one of the things that people don't realize is that a lot of the people involved in the mob, even Jaime Weiss, he changed his name, he was actually Bohemian. He was assassinated on the steps of Holy Name Cathedral, which is the Catholic Archdiocese primary church in Chicago, and it was built of limestone. And I remember I went there 1 year to the school, and the priest used to point out the holes in the limestone. Now, I understand that they've been covered up, but Jaime was trying to escape, seeking sanctuary from the bullets of Al Capone, I guess. But also in Chicago, all these gangsters are buried in the Roman Catholic Cemetery, according to their ethnicity. Al Capone is buried in Mount Carmel, which is known as Italian Boot Hill. Also, the bishops and priests of Chicago Archdiocese are buried there, but I don't think they're buried in the same section. The Irish ethnic mobsters are buried in an Irish dominated cemetery, I'm told. We'll get into this with Pat Butler. And, of course, there's another group, the Germans. It's very, very ethnic when it comes to dying in Chicago. Now, among the other what I call political frauds and fiction is the Walter Winchell 1958 TV series, The Untouchables, which is those of us who researched that period call it The Unthinkables, where he had Elliot Ness pursuing successfully Al Capone and putting him behind bars at Alcatraz. That didn't happen. Elliot Ness had very little to do with bringing down Al Capone and that part of the mob. The people who did it, now, the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, Colonel McCormick, did know Herbert Hoover, and he asked Herbert, the president, to send in Treasury accountants to investigate Al Capone and see if he could get him on something, federal charges, because the state wasn't doing anything. Hoover sent in a Treasury agent named Elmer Lincoln Irie. And he worked out of 219 South Clark, which was the old federal courthouse, which is where I worked many, many years later. And they had a special squad of U.S. Department of Justice attorneys, and he had incorruptible judges like Judge Wilkinson. He was long since dead when I went to work in that building. Anyway, they got a hold of Al Capone's books and found out he was not paying income tax, even though he was selling all this illegal liquor and getting big profits from him. That's how they got Al Capone. Al Capone was convicted. He also was on a gun charge, I think, and he went to federal prison in Atlanta. This time they sent him to the worst prison in the country, Alcatraz, out here in San Francisco Bay, and some of his enemies were there. Now, the best movie on Al Capone is the original one in 1959 with Rod Steiger and Robert Stack. They've had some other ones with Sean Connery where he made that statement, if they come at you with a baseball bat, you resort to a gun, that kind of thing. This didn't happen. And then it was another one with Kevin Costner, and then it was another one with Robert, I forgot his name, good Lord. Anyway, there's been so many of these Al Capone films and the mob, but there a lot of them are just plain fiction, but great entertainment, so just as long as you know that. Now, we're going to be back Monday with the part two of the interview. I had to edit it down. with Patrick because he covered a lot of topics. And one of the things that people haven't looked at is the role of the Roman Catholic Church during this period when Chicago was a wide open city and it had Catholic mayors. So we'll be back Monday at 3:30, excuse me. We'll have those interviews, plus we'll be updating some other things. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We do have not only the section on the video on Victoria Nuland, who used the F word when she was talking about leaders in the European Union. This type of cussing, and when you think nobody's listening, is nothing new. We've had FDR talking about the Bolivian President Vargas as calling him a son of a bitch, or he was called a son of a bitch, and FDR said, well, at least he's our son of a bitch, that kind of thing. We had President John Kennedy when he went up to Canada to negotiate with then Prime Minister John Diefenbaker on placing American missiles in Canada. Diefenbaker didn't want any part of that. A very acrimonious diplomatic meeting. And Kennedy was supposed to have written down on a piece of paper, which he didn't retrieve, that I don't want to meet this boring son of a bitch again, something like that. And Jackie, who accompanied John Kennedy, also thought that Diefenbaker was a bore. Well, the Canadians were furious about this, and, you know, this happens, and they say things about us, and, this is the way the world operates, so we've got to get real. So we will end with our usual politics and program. We will be back Monday, and hopefully there won't be any more emergencies. So go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS, and we will end with our usual theme, politics and poker. Excuse me. Where the heck is it? Here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a
Ready?
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where's the call of duck.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrace.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll fold.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23. What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot, that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average guy.
Okay, folks, we'll be back Monday. Have a safe weekend. It's Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.